Hello, Internet. It's Tori. You're listening to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. To join the discussion, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/CosmereCast, where you'll find an invitation to our Discord server. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Mike. Joining me this week are Craig.
Hi, insert witty saying here.
Dave.
Yeah, okay.
And Tori.
Hello, Internet.
And we start with good thing, and Craig does that, and go.
Was that planned, or... I don't know. I guess we don't know. Well, it's been another 6 months, everyone, and GDQ has come to a close. However, they've raised more than $2.4 million for Doctors Without Borders, which is incredible. And that's
Is that a lot?
That's a lot of dollars.
That's a lot of dollars. A lot of dollars.
That is at least $3, possibly more.
It's just incredible how the speedrunning community comes together for these events. And, you know, it's speedrunning. It showcases randomizers, actually. There were a lot of them this time. And it's just, I love how everyone is raising money for, like, they're consistent. Like, I'm worried that it would drop off. I don't know for me personally, Twitch viewership is sort of down. Like, I haven't been watching Twitch as much as I used to. Maybe because I have a kid and it's just hard to do all that. But no, it still gets the numbers. It still gets lots of donations. And it makes me feel good that it's put to a good cause. Summer Games does the Doctors Without Borders. The Winter Games that they have around January is for Prevent Cancer Foundation. So they raise over $2 million each time. This is incredible. So much good. So shout outs to that.
Any specific runs you want to highlight?
Oh, man. The whole finale on the last night, like, just go back and watch everything. Like, the Super Metroid run, I think, was pretty good. Maybe Dave, I don't know if Dave, you happen to catch that. But that one was really good. But then they had the Super Mario Maker, whatever. Trolls Showcase? That was hilarious. Oh, that was so good. I mean, like, the whole finale, the whole last day was really good. And of course, the Kaizo Mario World hack, specifically the one that Dan Salvato made, was incredible to watch. You can go back and watch that. Yeah, good stuff.
Neat. Dave, I think you're up.
Yeah. My good thing this week is Shatterhand OST on NES. I have no idea what the game's about. Music's great. Don't know who composed it. It's not a Konami game, but sometimes it sounds like one. And yeah, it's got a pretty infamous cover with like a 90s dude wearing sunglasses and he's like punching a hole. Yep. And like, yep, his skin's like peeling off and he's got like a metal skeleton or something. No idea what's going on there. Music's great.
It's a hand that shatters, Dave. Clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah, not to be confused with the orcs from Black Rock, or from, not Black Rock, the Ramparts, Hellfire Citadel.
Okay, we know less about the game now than we did before we started.
Yeah, but music's great.
Cool. So my good thing this week is sugar-free Jolly Ranchers. I have one in my mouth right now because I'm super congested. I hope that doesn't come across, but I was like clearing my throat for about 15 minutes constantly before we started. I will probably do so throughout the episode. I'm sorry. But yeah, sugar-free Jolly Ranchers, they taste really good. They don't have sugar. I can have them.
And they're free?
No, they're actually quite expensive compared to like regular hard candy.
So it's not like a Pepsi free.
It is exactly like a Pepsi free.
They got to charge you extra for the process of taking all the sugar out, because they already put the sugar in and then they have to take it out again. It's not like they're made with no sugar to start with. Like, that's
like seedless grapes.
That's how you account for the price.
But yeah, they're pretty good. So for those of you who are in a situation similar to me and you can no longer have sugary stuff, these are good. These are pretty good. Tori.
Yeah, before I mention my good thing, I probably need some of those sugar-free Jolly Ranchers, because I also am super congested, and I apologize to all of our listeners, but I will probably be hacking and coughing and phlegming and sniffling through the whole recording, and hopefully future Mike or Craig is going to edit that out. Good thing. Yet another plug for Dropout TV. The season 3 premiere of Make Some Noise, which is a show where there's a whole bunch of improv prompts and the contestants have to act out the prompts. This is the spiritual successor to Whose Line Is It Anyway? And the premiere for season 3, it's for those of you who are familiar with it, it's Josh, Zach, and Brennan, the original Noise Boys. And this episode was so funny. You guys,
oh my gosh, I need to watch that.
It was so funny. I laughed so hard during one particular part, and you're going to know it when you get to it. I could not breathe. I was laughing so hard. It was
I'm thinking
so
of like
funny.
Four different spots that it could be.
That's a good thing.
It was so funny. That's... Just can't recommend it highly enough, especially if, you know, you're having a tough week and you're all like having allergy attacks and you're terribly congested and you just don't feel particularly well. Maybe treat yourself to the season 3 premiere of Make Some Noise on Dropout TV.
Oh, also,
not paying us to say that. We just really like Dropout TV.
Yeah, no, when are they
we're paying them to say that.
Yeah, several of us are paying them to allow us to say this. So this season of at least Make Some Noise, possibly some other shows, Michael Swaim, formerly of Cracked.com, is one of the writers.
I'm pretty sure
that he wrote at least a couple of the prompts that made it into this first episode of Make Some Noise.
Okay, now I even more need to watch it. I've been making my way through Game Changer. I'm in season 3, which was filmed in 2020. Very obvious that it was filmed in 2020. It's still good, but it's different now. But yeah, I like Game Changer. I like Make Some Noise. I do need to watch that other show you were recommending before, Tori. It's on my to-do list. Honestly, I just need to watch everything drop out.
Yes. Yeah.
Smarty Pants is excellent.
I think that was the one that Craig was.
Thousand Airs is really fun.
Didn't you recommend the Very Important People or whatever that's called?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was great. So many good shows. They know what they're doing. They know their target audience, and it's us.
We need to make comedy.
That's my good thing.
That's enough good things. Let's get on to not good things.
What?
Tragic.
Let's move on
tragic
to chapters,
things.
Mike.
No. That's still
Why,
good,
what
Mike.
Happened?
Tragic chapter.
Okay.
This is Tori's fault. Tori. Well,
first off, yes,
no,
Tori,
no,
I have...
The diagram. It's the diagram's fault.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Why, last week, did we stop at the chapter we did and not just do one more and end the part?
Because you forgot to read all the chapters last week. Or
no,
that last week.
No, that's not why.
That was the week before.
It really was a pacing issue. If I had done that, then the remainder chapters would have not split into it. It would have been too long for one episode, but too short for two separate episodes. So,
okay, that's my only question for the diagram. I have multiple other questions as I get through my synopsis.
I would love to hear them.
All right. We start off in the noodle shop. And it's super packed in there because all of the painters are in the noodle shop because they finally believe that the stable nightmare exists and they've called in the Dreamwatch and they're like, oh, we're sorry that we called your brother a liar. It's because of all the lying he did, but we are sorry. And then Design is like, wait, look on the TV. The spaceship has landed. They're reaching an alien planet for the first time, and Yumi and Painter are both thoroughly expecting it to be Yumi's world, and it isn't. It's some folks with forearms and pale skin. Or chalky white skin, I should say. Which, we know what that means.
Do we?
Ah, we sure do.
Yeah, we do. Everyone is on the same page right now.
Nope,
we don't need
to
explain
it.
We don't need to explain it, especially for Craig, who's been listening this whole time. So, Craig, why don't you explain what I haven't explained yet, but we all understand.
Design is the best character. That's all I got to say. There's nothing else that you need to add.
Four-armed okay, people.
So for our listeners, I walked away to get my book, and Mike knows this, and he's teasing me.
The aliens that they meet are have four arms.
Yeah.
What and we know what this means.
Yeah, they're Shodel. I think that's the term. That's
maybe the not Shodel specifically, but Fane.
Wait, they have four arms? That's not so special. I have two forearms.
Oh, Dave. Yes, they have four arms.
But yeah, it also means that that is not Yumi's planet. And now we're back to a mystery of what the heck is going on with Yumi's planet and Nightmare's planet. And are they the same planet? Are they different planets? Nobody knows. End of part four. And that's it for the week.
You so if we ended there, Mike.
Painter Nightmare.
If we ended there, Mike, tell me you wouldn't be like, I got to read more. I mean.
No, this week I need to read more. Yeah. And I can't.
I know. I could not stop. I did stop. But
yeah, you can read it.
But this is torturous.
When we're done the episode,
I just wanted to keep going. I'm like, so good. And I even know what happens, and I want to keep going.
All right. So, still in the noodle shop, Yumi gets into an argument with all the other painters of like, hey, you should really be nicer to, I don't even remember his real name, Painter.
Nikaro.
Painter, yes?
Yeah, Painter.
Numuhukumakiaki Ayalunamore. Gotcha.
Nikaro.
Anyway, you should be nicer to him because, like, I get that he wronged you, but also, do you not understand what he went through? And they're like, no, we don't. He was just an a-hole to us. And she's like, you guys suck. I'm not getting food. I'm gonna go sleep now. And then we wake up back on Yumi World.
All right, is this the chapter where she goes into the kitchen or no?
Oh, wait, sorry. Back up. Other things happened. They talk to Design a little bit. They ask for a map. Design calls over one of the regulars at the noodle shop, who turns out is a Dicey and Iamian.
It's not one of the right. It's one of the core group, the friend group.
Uh-huh.
Who is a regular at the noodle shop? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yes.
Yeah, I didn't remember her either. I was like, oh, this is the person that I just put in the back of my mind because I didn't think that they were worth paying attention to.
There's and one that's like a goth girl. That's her. And there's another one who's big into the dramas. Yeah. That's the other one.
See, it's perfect because she has all that goth makeup on to cover all the cracks.
Yeah, she's always wearing heavy makeup. Yeah.
Okay, Dave, the fact that you and I both just fully ignored this character and when she was brought forward, we're like, yeah, I guess she was there. I don't know. I'll take your word for it. That means that she, as a Dicey and Iamian, was doing her job very well.
I'm like, that is perfect. That's well done. She only has like a couple lines at the beginning and then she fades into the background.
Oh, I thought she was described very well. I thought she sounded like a great member of the friend group and I wanted to be her friend too.
I didn't really care about any of the friend group. Like, I barely cared about Akane and Muscle Dude.
Toujin?
Yeah, Poutine.
What? Oh, yeah.
Poochie?
In this chapter, he flexes his neck, and Yumi's like, hey, it makes your head look small. And he's like, thanks!
Yeah. He's pretty charming. I just, you know. Like, but it was kind of like, yeah, the first time I see each of these characters. I'm not bothering to pay attention because I don't know if I'll ever see them again.
Dave, do you remember the like extent to which you mapped out who everyone was in Elantris?
Well, because they all had multiple.
There were so many characters, and I didn't remember any of them. And Dave's like, "Hey, remember so and so?" I'm like, "Huh?"
Yeah, who? And also yeah. With them being Elantrian, Kyan. They all had the weird names with the too many vowels in them.
But I didn't really remember their names so much as I remembered that each of them had like a weird quirk.
Well, all of these people have weird quirks, and we don't care, because one of them's a bug lady.
I think they're more memorable than Elantrin characters.
Yeah, but Elantris taught me not to care about the minor characters.
Correct.
Oh, you sweet summer child. I learned that from Robert Jordan.
Yeah. The things I learned from Robert Jordan were to ignore minor characters. Anybody whose name sounds like someone else's name, they are the same person until you're told otherwise. And
guys from that
you can fully skip all description and just go to dialogue.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That absolutely can do that. Mm-hmm. That's where I learned that skill as well. And you get plenty of chances to practice.
Anyway, Dicey and I'm Ian.
Saying there's too much dialogue in Wheel of Time?
No. There's too much description.
Too much description.
Dicey and I'm Ian for the fifth time.
Yeah.
Has sent out her bugs to map out the local area. And bugs aren't scared of the darkness, so they have pretty thoroughly mapped out the local area, except that there are some parts that they can't cross because there's like darkness walls or something. She sketches a, according to design, extremely accurate map, which Nightmare memorizes, including the scale.
You call him Nightmare again.
Painter.
Okay. It's his name.
Maybe. Mike, did you read ahead?
No.
Okay.
No, I read the chapters assigned to me, and I stopped, and I hate you.
Nice. Now you hate the diagram.
Yeah, so we have a map, and we have a theory that maybe they're on the same world, and maybe the walls correspond to the towns in Yumi's world, and then we fall asleep, we go to Yumi's world, and we find out, we get a map, and we find out, yeah, that's actually accurate. All of this corresponds, and Yumi has a plan. Instead of Painter going and smashing the machine with a rock, which was his plan, Yumi's like, what if we get a bunch of people and a bunch of rocks, and we all together go and smash the machine with rocks?
Yeah. Why use one rock when many will do tricks?
And so they go and do that, and there's a whole standoff with the scholars, and one of them's like, well, it's cool that you figured some of this stuff out, and then Painter's like, well, I bet it's just different dimensions, and it's... We're traveling between dimensions. Like, that's a pretty good theory if you don't know anything. And you don't know anything. But, you know, good job. Good try. And he turns on a machine and everything gets extremely weird and confusing. And apparently, Liyun was the stable Nightmare somehow.
Yep.
And the bond
Everyone's
between...
actually Nightmare.
Shut up. I haven't gotten that far.
Okay.
No spoilers, Craig.
What? It's spoilers in the chapter.
It is not explained in the chapter.
Okay. No, I disagree.
It's implied. Sure. It's not explained. The bond between Painter and Yumi is broken, and he snaps back to his world, which is apparently like 10 miles away. It's a pretty short trip. Yumi at one point like starts to dissolve or something. Like, it's very weird. I had trouble following it. I'm sure there's an explanation in probably the next chapter, Tori. Probably the next chapter.
So I will say it is more than just implied, Mike. The scholars start looking like nightmares as well. Like, not just Liyun. Essentially, everyone starts having the weird, like, mist fadiness that nightmares look like with the white piercing eyes of the stable nightmares, right? They start looking like that. So it's not just Liyun. It's...
I mean, I suppose while Mike was waiting to move on to the next chapter, he could have reread this chapter.
No. We don't do that.
You know he did that 5 minutes before recording.
I think he read it right before he posted in the channel saying, what the heck?
Oh, yeah.
That is exactly when he finished this week's chapters at 3:55. Oh, my time, 3:55 p.m.
Yeah, that's it. And what, you think I'm going to reread a Brandon Sanderson book? What are you, out of your mind? Come on.
Yeah, nobody ever does that.
I've never done it.
One and done.
Beginning of the next chapter, we start back over from the beginning. Just beginning of the book. We're starting over.
All right, cycle two.
Except this time Yumi thinks something's weird, but it's not. It's normal. Everything's fine. And we end the chapter.
Yeah, we do. That's where
it is. Liyun has a couple extra lines, but that's it. That didn't happen in the first cycle.
They skipped to a different town. Damn, whatever. Lines.
They did. They went to a different town. Yep. Mm-hmm. That's it. That
I'm
is
very
that
frustrated
happen
right
next?
Now. No more book. The end. You excited, Mike? After this episode, you could go read more.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna.
As soon as we kick you off for spoiler time.
I am. As soon as we're done, I'm diving right back in.
In order to do chapters, Mike, without taking notes, and I refuse to take notes, I have to have it fresh.
True.
can read it twice.
I'm not going to do that either.
Now, well, then you can just skip ahead time.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that in one of the...
Yeah, it was in this week's chapters.
there was a time travel theory that design was like, no, that's dumb, you're dumb, your theory is dumb.
Back in time.
It's yeah, like, but Mike only has can to go forward in time. Read the chapters.
Yeah, you're doing that right now.
Yeah, we can click, but we can't back to the future. We can't plot, sure.
Hey, guys, I figured out the real-life equivalent of painters.
What's that?
The real-life equivalent of a painter is a lifeguard, because some people will appreciate what you do. Very few people will appreciate what you do and give you cool gifts and food and stuff. But like 90% of people just kind of ignore you and pretend you don't exist unless something horribly, horribly wrong happens.
That's a good comparison. And crap pay.
Crap pay.
Yes, that too.
But you don't feel bad when a lifeguard is around. Well, I guess, no, that's not true. If you go to the beach, then you get annoyed that there's lifeguards there because you're like, ugh, I just want to go out to this one probably unsafe section.
If you encounter a lifeguard, it's like, eh, it's a lifeguard. But if you encounter a lifeguard that is actively doing their job, like something has gone wrong and they have to fix it, that's unsettling as heck. Nobody wants to see that.
Yeah.
There you have it.
I was going to say maybe EMTs would actually also fit into this bucket.
Yeah,
I
was thinking
like
of the way we treated essential workers during the pandemic.
Yeah.
It's like
all social workers, definitely nurses, doctors, EMT. Man, why do we treat these people poorly? That's sad. They do such good jobs.
I didn't. My sister's a nurse and I appreciated the heck out of her.
Nice.
From a safe distance.
No, we lived together. we were actually, for most of quarantine, we were living together.
All right, so I have
she
some...
She was able to, like... until she was able to go back to work.
I have some questions.
Yeah?
Okay.
I don't need answers. These are not the sort of questions that need answers. Yes. I just have questions.
I like remaining questions, yeah.
All right, so if everybody on the Yumi side is a stable nightmare, how does that even work with them growing food and having plants and stuff? Like, what is going on there?
Oh, boy, do you want to know.
If Liyun was the stable nightmare the whole time, when? When was she doing these things? How? When and how?
When Yumi was asleep.
Or in the bath.
What's up with spirits? How does that work? Why do nightmares get spirits? But the dark side painter people, they don't get spirits. They just get nightmares. What and how and why?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm.
Any theories? What do you think?
No, none. None at all.
I may point out one thing that we learned from this week's chapters. Yumi is super... Oh, I'm actually going to read it in my bullet points. Yumi is super invested. Like, we're talking Elantrin level invested.
Yep.
I mean, that was established before, not to that degree, but design already said from the beginning, like, Yumi is hecka invested. She just didn't have a machine that she had dug out of Hoid's that does that.
Yeah.
Yet. Which, Hoid's little interjections are delightful.
Always.
Still really enjoying those.
Mm-hmm. It's because design says, I mean, accurate. She says accurate things, and Hoid's like, where does she get these ideas from? And it's great.
Like, I wish he had a better, you know, system for all of this. And he's like, I do. It's my brain. Well, that doesn't help when you're a statue, man. Come on.
By the way, once again, I want to point out the artwork that is featured on my Twitch channel while we record here. It features all of the friend group, including Yumi. And it also has design and Hoid as a statue. It has everyone that we care about in the book right there.
I need to flip back through that because I kind of skipped past that to read.
There was another piece of artwork that goes with this week's chapters. Mike didn't mention this in his summary, but there is a scene where Yumi approaches the wall, the barrier.
Yeah, the darkness, the dark,
yes.
The darkness, and she does some stacking and the darkness goes away.
And the spirit of a Yokihiju comes out.
Yep.
Which we're told is just a nightmare. Probably. And also design is scared of it.
But there is an illustration of that, and it looks pretty good.
I love all the artwork in this book. It's so good.
Oh, yeah. And when Painter gets sent back to his body, he tries going to the darkness and doing some stacking, but he's not good enough at it. Or he's not invested enough. I don't know.
He does a stack of 12, and, you know, that's a pretty good job for a beginner. All right, so shall we... Chapters Dave? Chapters Tori?
Let's shall. All right, Chapters Dave. That's it. That's all I got.
Oh.
I forgot to read the chapters this week. I didn't do the homework.
Tori, do you have anything? I have a ton of bullet points, so I'm letting you guys go first.
So one of the things I enjoyed was when Masaka is making the map and Painter's like, how accurate is this map? And Design's like, well, you know, when your body is made of a bunch of bugs that might be far away from each other, you tend to be good at distances, so the map's pretty accurate. But then Painter is able to replicate the map just with his artistic, amazing spatial awareness. And you know how artists are so talented and they can make the other eye the same size as the first eye, and like that's how you know you're a real artist, is when you can do that.
And so when you can draw feet.
Can be symmetrical.
Yeah, so he's able to replicate the map. It's impossible. And
you can draw feet and people's like actual musculature and organs and stuff make sense. And they're turned in ways that the human body actually can turn. And there isn't a gun that, like, one line is going this way and the other line would be going this way if the lines were right. And it's just, it's a mess. Rob Liefeld, you're a monster.
And, like, people, you can actually draw people's heads tilted. That's a big one.
Fun fact, you guys just reminded me. I learned recently that Michelangelo's statue of David is widely regarded as the most accurate physically of all artworks, except that there is a muscle missing in the back.
Really?
And like Michelangelo left notes saying that that had to be done on purpose because of a flaw in the marble. So...
Wow.
It's the most physically accurate representation of humanity, except for the marble wasn't cooperating.
See, me, I wouldn't even notice because I know nothing about muscles.
Right?
Or art. So it'd be like, marble. Yep, that looks like a guy. It's accurate.
What about the hair muscles? Did he get the hair muscles right?
Oh, you know he did. That statue has great hair. I'm guessing. I've not looked too closely at that part.
Anyway, because Painter has been trained classically to paint, he has the same ability that Shallan does to magically memorize and recreate things.
I don't... Okay, Shallan is using...
classical painting techniques, Craig.
No, I've talked about this before. I don't think Dave was a part of it, but essentially she can see the identity of things. And therefore, she takes a snapshot. She peeks into the cognitive and spiritual realm, takes a little snapshot, boom, and enters into her mind.
Well, so her artistic ability is influenced, inspired, upheld by her investiture. But Painter, we could argue, is a better artist because he's not invested at all, according to Design.
He's invested in his paintings.
Yes.
He's regular, normal human invested.
Yeah. I have no trouble believing that if he looked at the map and he measured the distances between the circles, I mean, I think once he has that, I mean, he is a skilled painter. I don't see why anyone couldn't do that. I think you can ask any skilled painter and say, hey, reproduce this picture that you were able to look at for an hour. They could do it.
I actually just talked to a friend of mine from church. She's a professional artist. And I forget what picture I was showing him that I had drawn. And I was like, yeah, I was looking at a reference when I drew it. And he's like, yeah, well, like 90% of professional artists actually do that. And there's like a very rare few that, you know, can actually draw from their brains.
I mean, Painter even references that. He mentions how, like, when he was first learning, you use references. Like, it's exactly how he learned how to paint in the first place.
I used to know a comic book artist, and he would just have his friends come over sometimes and take pictures of them in different, like, poses and stuff. as just to make references so he didn't have to look it up or try to find the right thing. He'd have the right thing.
Yeah.
Well, and if you've ever seen the the little like the wooden human that you can pose. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, if you've ever watched the behind the scenes Disney animators stuff, there's videos of like the very old animators who were doing Robin Hood and Jungle Book, the classic Disney cartoons, and they're just over there animating, and they've got a mirror right beside their drawing station, because they'll just look in the mirror and make a face, and then they try to draw the face that they saw in the mirror.
I could just take a selfie. That works too.
Well, not back then.
They had self-portraits back then.
Yeah, you would look in a mirror and then you would draw it.
Yeah. Leonardo did one of those.
That's difficult to do with katanas.
Da Vinci did that. All right.
Yeah, but Leonardo screwed up his self-portrait. He forgot to draw one of his ears.
I'm just going to jump in.
That's the wrong artist.
Wait, that I'm thinking of Van Gogh.
Yep.
I have a ton of chapters.
That's how they pronounce his name. Right, did you ever see Doctor Who?
Yep.
They pronounce Van Gogh as Van Gogh.
Because that's how it's pronounced.
So weird.
Chapter 30.
In England, maybe.
So I will point out, I highlighted these on my first read, so I, like Mike, had no idea what was happening, and I highlighted everything that seemed interesting. So, we're talking about the landing on the star, or whatever they call it. I don't know, astronauts? Whatever they are called on this world. There are very few landmasses, though. It seems like these people might spend most of their lives sailing the oceans, for we see many boats. And then they talked briefly about the Heian lines. This is what they... that was what had carried them all the way. A pair of mobile Heian lines connected back to their planet, capable of letting a space vessel travel like a train, constantly powered, pushed by the lines. They have train tracks through space, which, if you play Honkai Star Rail, is also how they get around in space, sort of. I mean, it's a space train. I don't know. It's cool.
I just want to point out for the viewers at home that Dave and I both made the same expression when you mispronounced Heian a minute ago. It was entertaining. Yeah, that you say it right now.
What did I say? Heian? No. Heian. Oh, Heian.
Heian. There's an extra N right in the middle. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I will proceed to keep getting it wrong. Water like that would boil away, she said. There aren't enough high grounds for more than an occasional cool spring, unless maybe it's out beyond the searing stones in the cold wastes. Up high? Let's see. And then they describe the people that are there. Limber, tall, with four arms. The explorers describe them as having chalk white skin. They most certainly weren't human. Though, you might have guessed this, Painter was stunned. Yumi wasn't from the star. She never had been. Part 4. Okay, hold on. I have to jump ahead. Okay, so now, are we back on Yumi's world? Yeah, the scholars, okay. The machine, she thought, keeps a piece
Craig,
of... Humba?
We never left Yumi's world.
Got me. The machine, she thought, okay, we're in Yumi's section of the world, keeps a piece of the spirit soul. That's why the gifts the scholars create don't work as well. It was collecting strength to maintain its power, or for some other purpose? Chapter 32. How do you know, Painter asks. Because time travel into the past is impossible, Design said. I can show you the math. She can show us the math. But I think, legit, Sanderson did not want time travel to be a thing. So, I mean, I don't think there really is math to explain it, but essentially it's just like, we are never going to do time travel. Or at least, we're never going to go into the past in the Cosmere. So, no time travel for us. I'm sad, but, you know, that's fine.
In the Cosmere.
In the Cosmere. We can slow or speed up time relative to other places or people, Design said. That's easier in the spiritual realm, where time flows like water into whatever container you provide. But you can't go back. Nobody, not even a shard, can do that. Well, I think in the spiritual realm, time is very nebulous. It's sort of like it just all exists at the same time. But yeah, you're not going back in time.
Oh, Design in this section keeps bringing stuff up and then immediately saying, I'm not going to explain that.
This Fabriel would give a far more accurate reading of your spirit web than I can on my own. I was highlighted because we have Fabriel. She's from Roshar, of course, Fabriel. Huh, Design said. What? Yumi and Painter said in unison. The readings are going haywire, Design said. Because you're highly invested. Like, super invested. Storms, Design said. Yeah, this is like return level investiture. No more. Elantrin level.
Yeah, who did it? I did piss off titties.
Is that so?
What did you tell them?
You could have fooled me.
Well, now you're whispering.
Yeah, she likes to whisper. Here, now you can hear them.
Tell us more about that, Ada.
Yeah, for 50% of the titties.
Teddies?
You have to check out the kitties?
Kitties! Oh.
You want to see kitties? Oh! I know what she wants. So, Tori, you posted a picture of your new cat.
Yes, I did.
And I showed her, and she's like, I want to see more.
So I will post more when we're done recording.
She wants more pictures or a video of the cat.
Okay. I can't do that.
The cat's not there now. You have to wait till later. Okay.
Yeah. I almost brought her in here while I was recording, but Phantom wants to be her big brother so bad. And I can't have Phantom in here while I'm recording because he's loud. And if the kitten was in here and he was outside the door, we would just hear him, you know, like at the door clawing and it would be loud. Yes. More kitty. Can do.
Okay. That's a plan. All right, where was I? Yeah, well, everything is investiture because matter, energy, and investiture are the same. I've talked about this before.
Yeah,
but
sounds familiar.
Souls, as you'd call them, are parts of our beings that are pure investiture. Hold on. Whew. Just, you know, talk amongst yourselves.
It reminded me a bit of the, you know, the equation in the Discworld that explains the size of the Unseen University Library, which is that knowledge equals power equals energy equals matter equals mass.
Knowledge.
Yeah. So when you put a bunch of knowledge together in one place, then it breaks the laws of space-time, and that's why bookstores are bigger on the inside. And
Okay, makes sense. All right.
Well, that makes sense, because according to Mortal Kombat, there's no knowledge that is not power.
Mm.
Everyone imprints memories in their investiture, Design said. It's why a cognitive shadow remembers everything the body did if the body dies. Like, honestly, I feel like Design is talking to us. She's, like, answering some questions that I'm sure fans have had. It's like, we have it here in writing now.
Yeah, and these are questions that, you know, Yumi and Painter did not have. But they might now.
What's a cognitive shadow? What's investiture?
It's like, I'm going to need you to go back and explain the first thing.
All right. Exactly the level... Oh, for Painter. Exactly the level we'd expect for this planet, which has no shard in residence, and where the people haven't been specifically granted extra. Shroud and splinters of virtuosity notwithstanding. So we have a bunch of shroud. They have the shroud, which apparently is invested. We have splinters of virtuosity that exist on the planet. They're invested, but that's it. People, base level.
So they aren't granted a breath.
No. Nope. No endowment here. All right. Moving on. Okay. for using a sword or a weapon to break the machine, I'd offer myself as I make an encouragingly mediocre sword. I'm sure she's a great sword.
She can't be as great as Nightmare.
No, not a great sword. I think she was a rapier. I seem to recall that.
Yumi, Design said, meet... Chinnik Dakridich, the 60th horde of the Natriarchic strain? I think I got like maybe 40% of that correct. Anyway, 60. I think when we read Dawn Shard, they only had what, like 24? So now we're at 60. Does that make sense? Is this a number that like makes sense to us, or am I like overthinking this?
I don't know. Like, is that the total generations of the bug crabs that make up the body?
I don't know.
Does that take into account the selective breeding necessary to make one big face?
They definitely been trying for a while to get this right. And that's how they figured out, oh, you need one bug for face, not many bugs for face.
I don't know. They had a pretty good thing going with face tattoos.
Yeah, it worked there, but I don't think it would work on this planet.
Sure, just get more people into face tattoos.
Yeah, problem solves itself. I mean, clearly.
Oh, just to say it's a goth thing. But they should have, instead of making her goth, they maybe should have made her into heavy metal.
All right.
Lots of face painting there.
Masaka worried about her being cute and everything, especially the knife that she gives off. Flowers are inscribed here. Very cute. Very cute, Yumi repeated. Don't tell anyone what we are, please, Masaka said. We are tired of people being scared of us. We're tired of wars. We like painting, please. What the heck is going on in the Cosmere? I know that they existed on Roshar, which was definitely a bunch of fighting, or at least the Alethi made it seem like there's a bunch of fighting, but this feels worse. To me, I read this and I'm like, there is stuff that has been happening in the greater Cosmere, and she was just trying to get away on this quiet little planet in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, we'll have to ask Odia Vinginianium.
Okay. No one on this world has the context necessary to understand what this thing is, except design. Yep. And design isn't going to share that with anybody. She doesn't have to.
Yeah.
And Hoid, and he can't share anything.
Yeah, and he never shares anything.
Well, Hoid would have figured it out on his own anyway. Probably like design did. Or Hoid told design. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm reading this, and I'm thinking that stuff is gonna get big. Like, after we're done Stormlight Archives, maybe after the first five, more likely after the whole entire 10, but I feel like there's a giant Cosmere war that happens. I suspect between the Skadrians and the Autonomites, whatever their planet is called.
Yeah, your favorite. The white sand world, your favorite.
Yeah, Tal'Dane. The Tal'Dane. They don't feel like they're leaving. I feel like they're using the cognitive realm to travel around. So more likely it would be the Skadrians and someone else, because Skadrians seem like they're on the path for space travel. And we know that because they're going to be in space age. I don't know. This just seems pretty big to me, and she just wants to go hide.
So if Era 1 was Age of Empires, and Era 4 is going to be StarCraft, what's Era 2?
Warcraft in space.
Oh, Warhammer 40K.
Yeah. All right. Hard places, Masaka explained. Walls in the blackness where the investiture has become solid, rising up high in the sky into the atmosphere like columns, one vast one a few miles away, other small ones, circles, all of them, like fortifications. I want to get back to that. That's actually a new highlight. I'm going to come back to this. I don't have the knowledge, have not gathered the power to deal with things like this. I came here to hide. It's just another, we're hiding again. Like we're overlapping, he said. Two peoples, one land. He sat back, proud of having been able to see this. At the same time, what did it change? There was only one way forward. I need to destroy that machine. It can summon spirits, he said, but it can't create art. This is talking about the machine. Art is about intent, Yumi. A rainbow is an art, beautiful though it might be. Art is about creation, human creation. A machine can lift way more than Toshin can. Doesn't make it less impressive when he lifts more than almost any human being. Honestly, this is also a new highlight, because how relevant is this now with all the AI art just floating around? Machines are creating art. I'm like, this is... Brandon wrote this, you know, during the pandemic. Well, I think this is right before, or yeah, I guess it was during the pandemic. But now it's like you have all this AI art everywhere, and it's like, it's just copies. It's not real art. The machine that's making it has no idea what things it's drawing.
I mean, you could just read out a list of prompts to the Stable Nightmare. I'm sure that would make it go away.
This is
bamboo, the realistic bamboo, 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 black and white bamboo.
So, the scholar now. So, the man said, this is the descendant of the nomads. You've done quite well for yourselves as a people. Tell me, what is it you think is happening here, boy? The division between our nations? The fact that you have entire cities nearby that can't visit ours? Like, this right here is like the floor drop moment. This was like everything you thought you knew about both scenes, both characters, sections of the world. It's just gone. The scholar is directly talking to Painter, not to Yumi. He sees Painter, Nicaro, Nicaro.
There you go.
Nickelback.
You got it.
That's the floor drop moment. I had to highlight that. That was before. That was early me highlighting that. Chapter 34. The thing that had been Leon turned towards them, and her form took on a lupine cast with spike sides, inky darkness. Painter recognized the thing. It's the stable nightmare. It was the stable nightmare that he'd been hunting. Leon was the stable nightmare. I admit, this was an excellent ploy by the spirits. Connect one of the girls to an outsider to anchor her soul, prevent us from altering her memories. It might have worked. You know, he's busy monologuing there. Okay, that is all I have for the bullet points. But I do want to go back to the wall of investiture. Because I think, you know, there's that whole question of, like, how does this world make sense? Like, Yumi has really hot floors. You have the plants that float on thermals and stuff like that. And then you have Painter's World, which is just sort of like, it's just nighttime Tokyo or something, you know? Lots of neon lights. I guess it's 80s, 1980s nighttime. You got neon everywhere. It's just nighttime all the time. But it's cool. Like, it's nice and cold, and you just have this shadow shroud. Like, very different. But we get a clue in that highlight that I read earlier. If it is just pure investiture that's being funneled or released from either the planet or just, I don't know, if it's pulling in these circles, then that is why it's hotter. There's more energy available because, as we learned, again, in this week's chapter and before, matter, energy, investiture, all the same. So if something has more investiture, it probably has more energy. It's just, it can be converted into energy and therefore heat. So it's just hotter. It's invested and it's just shooting up into the sky. So you have thermals, you have lots of heat, the floor's hot. There you go. I don't know if that makes sense. Someone with a more physical background, as in knows physics, can, like, actually me, but...
No, can we have a gym teacher in here?
That's my interpretation. All right. It only took me like 15 minutes, but there you go, guys. That's my bullet points.
Nice.
All right. Do you guys need to do a spoiler time, or have I caught up enough that you don't really have anything else to talk about?
No. I'm excited for finishing this next week.
Yeah.
Oh. Are we finishing it next week? Is that the last one?
Yeah. Well, we're finishing the book, and then we have an overview after that.
Yep.
With cast lists and all the other fun stuff.
Okay. Brandon, there's a lot that needs to still be explained.
You're on the hook, sir.
There is a lot that still needs to be explained. We are very late in the game to have this many questions unanswered. I'm really hoping you're not going to let me down, bud.
Yeah, guy.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye, and night.
This has been the Cosmere Deep Dive Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @CosmereCast or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.